Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the Breaking the Plane podcast. I am your host, Joe Scher, alongside my co-host, Burge, our wonderful third chair, Hogan, our ones and twos, Maestro, Kojak. Burge, how are we doing tonight, buddy?
Living the dream, man. Excited to get on and talk about all these rule changes with you.
Yeah,
lots of good stuff coming down, man.
I'm sure you took it in stride, didn't ruin your day at all.
Oh, we'll get into it, man. Get some stuff to say to you.
Yeah. What does a rule change have to do with that? Anyways, Hogan, my man, what's up, bro? How you doing tonight?
I'm fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm not doing too bad, dude. It's going to fucking rain for the next 3 days straight in South Carolina, so I'm already fucking mad about that, which is great. But other than that, I'm good. So, glad you're good, buddy. Oh, handsome devil, dude. Handsome fucking devil, bro. The blue blacklight is not a mistake.
Oh, well, I knew it would bring out my eyes for you, and I know our listeners can't see me right now, but anything to look good for you, Joe. I'm not going to lie. I am awesome. Missing the mustache. I'm missing the mustache.
Yeah.
Dang, I just noticed you don't got it no more.
Yeah, there was an executive decree I also lost my appeal on that executive decree. sometimes just executive orders come over the wire. You just fucking cover. Get out of the way. Shave your mustache. Call it a day. Kojak, what's up, buddy?
Wi-Fi's working. The camera's working. The mic's working. My brain's not working.
Yeah. Okay.
What'd you say?
No, we want to talk about the tech at all, or do you want to have a little code off real quick? No.
Nah, dude. Life's great.
I like your new living situation there.
Yeah, man. I bought me a house. In the metaverse
really
now.
Taking off. Look at that fucking couch,
dude. BTP's paying well. I got this little 3-bedroom house in the metaverse, and I got a little Break in the Plane poster hanging to the left of me for all of our visual learners.
It's kind of sick.
Yeah, we're doing great over here.
All right.
But the question is, how are you, Joe?
Come on. I'm great. Hogan already asked me, so thank you very much.
Whatever, dude. Whatever, dude. See you guys at the end of the episode.
Shout out, Alfonso. Whatever, dude. As always, we are brought to you by Primetime Productions. You can find them on the internet at primetimeproductions.net. And then you can find them on Twitter at primetimeprods. Primetimeprods. PRODS. Prods. Like productions, but like, yo, we're with the prods. You know what I mean? That didn't make any sense. Anyway, let's get into it, dude. For a fucking late March, early April, end of fucking free agency, beginning of draft, kind of lull news kind of cycle, we got some fun. We got some fun that I specifically want to ask Burge about. Burge, I want to start with the hip drop tackle. Why do you fucking hate this?
I hate the rule. First of all, the players union was like, don't eliminate it. So that tells you that there's some sense of from the players that they want to continue to have the ability to do that. Also, it's like, how are the officials going to legislate this? It's so subjective and it happens so fast that I feel the consistency from the officials is going to be an absolute joke. And it's going to give me, I guess I'm kind of happy because it's going to give me some fire going into next season to just bitch about the officials all the time because I love doing that. But at the same time, like, how the hell do you expect them to tackle? You can't hit high. You hit low, you're going to take somebody's knees out. Now you're eliminating this other form of tackling. To quote my good friend, Mr. Hogan, just slap the flags on him and go.
Yeah, I'll save my thoughts. I think you guys are kind of in the same vein here, so I'll let you guys keep running. Hogan, tell me what you think.
Burge nailed it. I mean, it's as simple as that. I am very frustrated by this ruling. It's getting preposterous. We're already at a point now where judgmental calls are ruining the game more so than they're making it more enjoyable. We still don't know what a catch is. Pass interference makes or breaks the game half the time, or the lack of pass interference makes or breaks the game. I can go back to 2 years ago when Brady was in his last year at Tampa, that Atlanta was about to win the game, and they got this new rule where you can't land on top of a quarterback. And I think it was the D-tackle sacked him for like the game-winning sack. And lo and behold, penalty was thrown, and all of a sudden Tampa Bay gets to win the game. What are we doing where we're empowering these referees to absolutely change the game to the point where they're at right now with judgmental calls, where we want to get away from that. I mean, not to change sports, but we look at baseball and it gets overblown when umpires screw up calls or with strikes and balls, guys getting tagged out, whatever it is. They want to get away from that and go to almost robot umpires, where you can't do that with football. You got to just stick with what works. And I get that they want to sit there and claim safety, safety, safety. It's not safety related. You're just trying to empower the refs to have more control over the game, make more judgment calls, and guys get hurt regardless of what happens. Just cut the shit. If it's not broken, don't fix it. Just because a couple guys get hurt by one play over the course of a year doesn't mean you automatically have to change the entire sport and get rid of contact. It's driving me nuts.
Yeah, I mean, no lies told by you guys. I mean, you guys are spitting facts, both of you. But I guess my thing comes from is the sometimes the predictability of a situation kind of garners my or I don't know, that's definitely not the right word, but sometimes it lessens the blow of what's going to happen. I thought this was coming after the discourse started at the end of the season, especially I think somebody got, was it Sam Laporta who was hobbled in the playoffs after like a hip drop tackle? He was like a young star rookie in the playoffs. So I get where you guys are coming from. I'm not shocked, because I think that this came from, hey, we had a lot of players get hurt by something which diminished the product. And in turn, if we try to outlaw what hurt them, it might improve the product. I understand that part, but like the player safety shit's bullshit. I mean, you guys are playing 17 fucking games. You're pushing for an 18th game, but then you're talking about player safety, putting in these rules. I just don't, it's just ass backwards, dude. You don't fix this kind of stuff like by implementing rules, dude. You should be investing in like the youth, and like you should be like doing it that way, and like trying, like they have all these new youth initiatives that you can't like use running as punishment, and you can't like, you like the way that like we all learned to tackle when we were little is like no more. Like it's completely different, dude. It's a completely different way to play the game at a younger level. And I think that like, dudes, keep going that way, dude. You're seeing these we talk about the wide receivers that come out now. We talk about the plethora of young quarterbacks they have now. That's because of an investment into the younger parts of the game, dude. You're throwing the ball and you have passing schemes a lot earlier in the game, which is now producing very skilled and very honed passers and receivers. So I don't know. I definitely know where you guys are coming from. Dude, the whole, like, but defense. Like, dude, it's so contrived, dude. You know that that's, like, dude, that's the every single rule in the last 20 years has been going away from defensive power. So it's just like, I'm so fucked. Like, it's a dumb rule. It's going to fuck the Patriots, and that's when I'm going to get fired. That's when I'll get fired up. But, like, for, like, actually getting fired up right now, dude, it's just like, what happened to the game I love? And it's just like, if it doesn't fucking, there is a, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But there's another thing. It's just like, don't ruin it. I'm going to fucking watch every Sunday. I don't know what you guys think about that. But
I will say there is such thing as over legislation and over like trying to control the game. And I think that this is what it's going to do. Hogan brought up a great point about the whole can't land on a quarterback and ends up deciding a game because the refs throw the flag. I'm all for officials staying out of a game, especially at the end of a game where it's close and two teams are duking it out. I hate to see games decided on a penalty that leads to either a game winning field goal or a game tying field goal, what have you. I could see that this is going to show up. You got a 2-minute drive. A team's driving for, you know, to tie a game late, and you're going to see this call come into play, and it's going to be a questionable play. Like, yeah, you could argue it's a hip drop. Yeah, you could argue it's not, and they're going to throw the flag on it, and it's going to be a 15-yard penalty and put a team in position to kick a field goal to either tie or win a game. And that's something that I think waters down the product way more than seeing backup players play. And I totally agree with you. The player safety thing is total BS. For crying out loud, we got the word today that they're getting two games on Wednesday on Christmas this year. They don't care about getting these players rest. They care about their wallets, and that's it. And for them to do this, I think it's going to be, I don't foresee this rule sticking around for long, if you're asking me.
Let me jump in real quick, because you brought up a great point there, Burge, about the whole player safety thing with the Wednesday games. It's absolutely insane that they're just sitting there preaching the safety, safety, safety bullshit. And again, like, I go back to what I was saying before, Joe, I guess to coincide with what some of your points are. I do agree that there are some things that need to be banned. I'm not sitting here saying that horse collar tackling needs to come back. That's a dangerous play. 9 times out of 10, you see a horse collar tackle, a guy breaks a leg, something gets snapped up, you worry that his back's broken. I'm not sitting here advocating, oh, we need to go back to when they clothesline guys or rip their face masks off and beat them with helmets. Like, contact is part of the game. It's a violent sport. But the hip drop thing, you can't sit there and tell me a 175-pound cornerback is going to be able to drag down almost a 275-pound tight end. That, like, you go back to how many times Gronk had to be taken out by his legs and what the injuries that he got. They didn't ban taking out the legs. I mean, at this point, they should, right? Because if we're going to go for safety, you can't touch mm-hmm. any part of the legs where you're going to get hurt with that shit. The hip drop is part of the game where you got to get the guy down. Otherwise, what are you going to do? You're going to let up a touchdown, especially in the Super Bowl. Am I sitting there going, well, I can't make this tackle or whatever because I don't want to get a 15-yard penalty because that's part of the rules now. A horse collar is completely different from this kind of stuff, but it's just you got to get away from it drives me nuts. You just got to get away from this shit where you're getting so judgmental on certain things, and it's going to get to a point where you're not going to be able to tackle a guy unless you pick him up and drop him down gently. I can't take it anymore.
Say you're sorry when you're putting him down to the ground. But what Burr said about it's going to affect a game, I think that it might affect a big game more with a guy apprehensive to make certain contact than it will the actual penalty. Because, dude, like, part of me is like, dude, they have implemented all these rules before and the players seem to adjust. So, like, instead of, like, throwing your legs forward, maybe splay them back. And, like, when you're bringing him down, you're dragging on the ground with him instead of, like, throwing your legs back and trying to, like, pull him back. But, again, that's giving the fucking guy running the ball opportunity to get away or he's going to gain more yards regardless. So, like, no matter – even if – let's say if they could implement this rule without any negative, like obvious negative, like, outcome, like a game decided by it or, like, some bullshit like that. Like, even if they try to – even if they tackle from behind and don't hip drop and don't get the penalty called and, like, do it clean, like, the guy is still – like, the runner still has, like – 10 times more opportunity to make more yards, break the tackle, or anything like that.
You're going
to
get 5 or 10 extra yards out of that because they're going to drag him a bit before the guy finally goes down. That's what's going to happen.
You're not going to have your fucking leg snapped in half so you're not writhing in pain. No, never mind. But I do agree that there was an adverse amount of like penalties called this way, but I think that it's just sometimes like there was what was the year? It was a couple of years, maybe was it last year or the year before? Maybe in the last couple of years where like every fucking quarterback was hurt and it was like fucking half the league was like backup quarterback. So like sometimes last that shit year, just happens, bro. Yeah, sometimes that just
part happens. Of the game. It's part of the game. Like Hogan said, it's part of the game.
Yeah. But football isn't I think Jabril Preppers had a fucking he's like, oh, yeah. we're playing football, dog. Like we're playing football. And it does suck for like and you said the thing about the NFLPA. Like, dude, 50% of the NFL Players Association is defense. If you have one offensive player that doesn't like this rule, that means the majority of the NFL players don't like it. So I know that for a fact that more than one offensive player like this fucking rule. And even Tom Brady's dumb, pandering, fucking annoying post-football ass was out there saying that, like, you got to let the boys play. And I totally agree, dude. Tom was the first to bitch and, like, try to get a call. But I feel like that was more gamesmanship than it was anything else. But, like, I don't know. They're massacring my boy football, dude. It's just – it's tough to see. You guys want to move on to a another rule change here?
Go for it.
So the new kickoff rule came from the XFL. So long story short, there's going to be a zone between the 20 and the goal line that you have to kick the ball into. The ball's kicked into there and caught. It has to be returned. The only way you can get a touchback is if it lands in that area and then rolls into the end zone. If it lands in the end zone, you get the ball on the receiving team gets the ball on the 30. If it goes out of bounds, they get the ball at the 40 still. So the only question I have for you guys, I couldn't find it in the research I did before the pod. What are they doing? Are they just leaving the onside kick the same?
That's a good question. I didn't see anything about that either.
Because it's like, I don't know. The onside kick already sucks. And you're
going to I'll be honest with you. I think that if this works out for the NFL, you're going to see the onside kick change to one of those odd proposals where it's like fourth and 15. Yeah, something like that.
Mahomes is never going to give the other team the ball. Imagine Mahomes with the new tip drop rule, fucking fourth and 15 from his own 40. I'm going for that every fucking time. Every fucking time. If I have Patrick Mahomes, I'm going for that every fucking time. But anyway, Hogan, what do you think of these new rule, the new kickoff rule, bud?
I'm interested to see how it works. I mean, the old curmudgeon in me, as soon as I saw what they're proposing, was like, fuck this. I don't want any part of it. Leave it alone. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I saw some clips from the, I think it was XFL that they drew the idea from. And I got to admit, I watched it and I was like, okay, you piqued my interest because I never looked at a kickoff kind of like that before. So I'm interested to see how it's implemented, if it works, if it does, like how it goes and everything. But at the same time, I'm curious, as like, I wish there was a way that we could somehow field test these rule changes before we just implement them. And
that's,
I think
what
that's
the NFL's for, bro. They have a partnership with the NFLPA or the NFL, dude. This is why this rule became about.
I guess, but like realistically, it would be better to see it actually transpire in an NFL game, because you're not getting the same talent whatsoever at XFL level. Like, you can't sit there and tell me that like there was ever a Devin Hester in the XFL that could like take advantage of this rule. But again, I can't sit here and bitch about something until I see the final product. So we'll see what happens.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm very intrigued by it. I agree with Hogan, where I would have liked to have seen, maybe like before they fully implemented it in the regular season, like get the preseason for like this year, have them all run it in the preseason to try it out. They're all versed in the way the kickoff is or was. So there wouldn't have been any harm for me to see teams do it within the three games of the preseason. It would actually make the preseason maybe worth watching at that point.
That's a good idea.
But I'm very intrigued by this. And at first I heard it like Hogan, I was like, I'm not interested in this. But then I saw the same clips that he did. And I was like, this is going to work. I think the best thing about it is they're going to force kickoff returns. It's going to be more exciting to watch this and not just have every kickoff booted through the end zone. I have a feeling that you're not going to see that happen as often. I have a feeling you're going to see teams try to make these guys run it back, because the players are starting at the 40, right? They're starting at like the 40 to start, start after the kick, and the kicker can't go past the 50. So it's basically 10. It's basically 10 on 10 for the blockers with a returner and a kicker. So they're not outnumbered. I'm very interested to see how this is going to work. This is a rule change I think is going to stick, and I think it's going to be good for the game personally.
I just think it's going to be more watchable football. That's just what it is. Like, it's not going to be just a fucking touchdown, touchback commercial. It's going to be actually something. And I don't know, Hogan, you said you watched some XFL highlights of this shit, and it's kind of fucking cool, dude. And I was saying in the group chat earlier, dude, it's like, as a Pats fan, dude, we fired Bill 1 year too late, dude.
Yeah.
1 year too late, bro.
Too early.
Imagine his crackhead ass with Ernie Adams fucking cooking some fucking good meth up to this fucking rule, dude. Dude, they're going to be doing some fucking triple lateral fucking a fumble rooski fucking hook and ladder for a touchdown. And, dude, did you see this rule came down, and then somebody signed Cordero Patterson like immediately.
Yes, it was the Steelers.
I thought that was funny. Dude's like a fucking million years old, and like, I don't know if he's like an elite fucking kick returner anymore. He's a decent running back now, I guess, but like, I thought that was funny. Fucking Steelers were like, new kick return rule, fuck it, Cordero Patterson now. So I just thought this is an overreact. Mike Tomlin's like, fuck, dude, get Cordell in here.
He got a 2 year deal too, which was funny.
Dude, a 32-year-old, like, big ass, like, gadget player, whatever. He's gonna see his dude. Good for fucking, I fuck with Cordell Patterson, dude. Mm-hmm. I fuck with him. What a way to make your way in the NFL. A little bit of one last housekeeping bit here of like recent NFL news. Decent player getting a deal. Tre'Davious White to the Rams. 1 year, $8 million guaranteed. The deal can get up to $10 million with incentives. We kind of threw this around the chat today. I think we all had kind of the same opinion, which was decent deal, decent player, good team. It's just getting better. I don't know if you guys have anything to add to that.
He's got to stay healthy. That's the big thing with him. He's got to stay healthy, and if he's healthy, he's an all-pro. So great signing by the Rams. Totally agree with you there.
Dude, I think the Rams fuck so hard, dude. I'm so happy I picked them as my dark horse. They're going to be so fucking good again, dude. They fuck so hard, dude. Dude, McVay's so hot, dude. He fucks so hard. There's no way they're going to be bad. There's no way they're going to be bad. But I'm going to eat this crow so hard, dude. There's going to be a clip of me, and I'm just going to be fucking 1-16. I'm like, dude, they're going to be sick. So we talk a lot of gambling on the show, and I want to get into a couple. We've talked about this before, and I kind of want to tie it back to the rule change rule. We had two separate instances of the sports equivalent of insider trading. So it broke recently that Shohei Ohtani's he is the Japanese Babe Ruth that plays for the Dodgers, and his interpreter got caught gambling and stealing shit from him to fucking pay his gambling debts, dude. And then Ohtani had a press conference recently. He said he never knowingly paid a gambling debt. And so this guy was like fucking like grifting off of Ohtani to try to make his bets and shit like that. But then, dude, you see all these videos coming out of Ohtani, dude. There's this one where fucking Ohtani, they're like backspinning baseballs, and it looks like they're gambling on that, dude. There's like, I don't know, some irregularities, I guess you would say. And then the other instance is Jonte Porter. So this is a guy for the Raptors who, not a great player, but had the most, dude, this guy had a prop of over under 0.5 three-pointers made. He's a bench player for the Toronto Raptors, an awful player, awful team. The most money in the market on any prop was on his over under three-pointers, specifically the under. He plays three minutes, and then leaves with hamstring tightness. Then a couple weeks later, same fucking thing happens again, dude.
Oh my God.
There's a bunch of money on his 3-point prop. He had a couple days earlier, he had 9 points, three made threes in like 20 minutes of playing time. And then this game again, all the money comes in on the under threes. And then he miraculously doesn't make it through the game with an injury. So I think that the way you bring this back to football, dude, football added another subjective fucking rule. They added another subjective rule to let the refs control the game. And I think it's going to keep getting that way. And I think that we've seen irregularities in officiating in every single sport since the legalization of sports betting. I am King Sports Bet. I fucking love gambling. I was doing it before it was legal. We used to make sports books at our fucking intramural fucking games in college. Like, we were bad. But like, getting in bed with the sports leagues is where I draw the line. And I think this is just you reap what you sow in this case. I don't know what you guys have to say about this.
Oh, it's the start of it's obviously it's still in its infancy. A lot of the states still haven't legalized it yet, but like, dude, give it another 5-10 years. You're going to hear cases of these players coming out doing this type of stuff way more. And yeah, tying it with having the sponsor the league and being that heavily involved. I'm surprised that like somebody hasn't come out and said, you're asking for a problem.
LeBron James has a sponsored betting segment by DraftKings on his fucking Instagram.
Like that's a total conflict of interest. I don't understand how they even allow that. Like maybe somebody's going to get smart in the near future and basically say the player's got to stop doing that stuff and basically say if you do it, like you're out. Or
Pete Rosen,
exactly. And the fact that like you say Pete Rose, but like it's so prevalent now, and that guy's still not in the Baseball Hall of Fame is an absolute joke. That's a little bit of a tangent.
It's more politics than it is. Not actual politics, but like inside baseball politics than it is him actually.
But you're going to see this stuff continue. This stuff is not, this is going to only get worse unless they find a way. And again, I just was a proponent of over legislation, but this is something they need to really get ahead of, or else you're going to have more Calvin Ridley's out there getting suspended for a year because he placed a bet, not even on his own game. But you're going to start seeing guys placing bets through friends or whatever.
No, that parlay was a banger, though. Did you see the one he won, though? Dude, it was a three-leg money line all-dog parlay, dude. He was a fucking – dude, I fuck with Calvin Ridley heavily, dude. And his chick was like, yo, you're not good. We're not living in Massachusetts. Like, I'm just going to leave you. Like, and he's like, all right, we'll split the difference. We'll go to Tennessee. And she's like, all right. Anyway. So, Hogan, I want to get your thoughts on – bullshit betting shit that I just brought up. And then I know you have a little bit of stuff to get off your chest. So I kind of want to give you the floor to finish up the gambling segment, and then just let that puppy purr.
I love it. I love it, buddy. Thank you. Thank you. And first and foremost, in terms of gambling, Burge, you kind of hit it where they got to figure it out, but at the same time, they're not going to figure it out because it's money. It's money. It's not going to go away. The amount of record money that DraftKings, that all of these guys made over the last, couple of years now that it's been legalized, it's not going away. I mean, think about before that the legalization of sports betting nationwide, pretty much at this point, you could only go to Vegas and Atlantic City, and that was it. And it was such a cornered market where we all know that there was bookies and crap like that, but it's now anybody can make a dime anytime they want on any bet they want. I mean, for Christ's sake, if you can bet on turtle races halfway across the world, that's where it's at. However, going into what I wanted to rant about a little bit today, is ineptitude. And the person that I want to slam that door on is Robert Kraft himself.
Let's go.
As a Patriots podcast, heavily focused, fuck Robert Kraft right now, man. Fuck him. I am so sick of the bullshit that this ancient crypt keeper motherfucker is spewing right now, because I don't know if you guys saw any of the interview that went down today with the meetings that is going on, but for him to stand up there and first and foremost say that he thought that the team was portrayed in a bad light on that Dynasty series. Disclaimer, I've not watched a single episode of that thing. Fuck that thing. I'm not watching it because I know it's a hit piece. He had all the control in the world that he wanted over that thing. And then the thing that really got me, I think, more than anything today was the fact that he sat there and said that as an owner of this organization, he didn't know the team didn't have a fucking daycare for the goddamn players. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Like, what are you doing, Kraft? Are you going to get too many massages again? I'll go that route. Fuck you. I'm pissed at you right now. Like, dude, wake the fuck up. You have employees, you have guys that you're paying millions of dollars, and you ranked almost dead last in that engagement survey that the players took between the weight room, the facilities, the visitors passes, everything. You were almost dead last, and you're going to sit up there on your podium and know that everybody knows you're worth billions of dollars, and you're going to sit there and go, I didn't know about that. Fuck you. Fuck you. And fuck your son and fuck the Crafts right now. Like, you've already ruined the franchise. You've ruined the franchises. No pause. No pause. I'm angry right now. I'm mad. Like, you brought this franchise from the depths that it was at to the all-time highs. And then for the last few years to go the way that they have, where you pushed out the greatest quarterback of all time, you pushed out the greatest coach of all time, and now you're going to sit there and act like you don't know what's going on in your organization? Fuck you. That's where I'm at. I don't know. You guys got anything to tell you about that? Yeah. I'm done ranting.
Dude, I'm 100% behind you on that. Like, you hear that? Pause that right there. Okay. For him to stand up there and say that, like, he was upset that his team and the franchise was portrayed in a negative light for that documentary, his name is all over the ownership of that documentary. So basically, he had to greenlight it to be released. What did he expect? What did he expect the fans to say when they saw that? He must have been too thick-headed when he had to have watched it himself before he greenlit it.
So, all right.
I'm just saying, he had to just, like, maybe his thick head was like, oh, they're going to see me out of this as the patriarch of the dynasty. Like, it was all me at the end of the day. I think that's what he was trying to portray there with sacrificing Bill Belichick to hell at the way that whole thing went down. It was an absolute joke. And, I also thought it was a little bit of an excuse making for an owner to come out and basically say it was the girlfriend's fault that Calvin Ridley didn't sign here. Like, that didn't seem like to me that was his place to say that. And it seemed like it was a bit of excuse making, whether it was true or not. I mean, it probably was true at the end of the day.
At least he did like stop himself and acknowledge the fact that they don't have a fucking quarterback was obviously in play.
Blamed the taxes. He blamed the taxes of Massachusetts.
Fucking move the team, dude. New Hampshire has no fucking income tax, you fucking idiot. All right. So
go ahead.
My first thing about craft is you raise the standard. So now you are the standard and you need to uphold the standard. So now the standard, now what you are producing is below standard. So now it is your job to increase your quality of your product back to the standard that you had set. So there's all this I didn't know or all that bullshit. He's playing fucking dumb. But I will give old Bobby Boy the benefit of the doubt on the documentary. So I was the first one to come on here and tell you guys to stop watching. It was a hit piece, right?
Sure.
Audio podcast. Thank you, guys.
Sure.
So I knew it was a hit piece. I don't think Kraft called in the hit. I don't think Kraft nixed the hit, though. So I think that if you think that Bob Kraft watched all of that in its entirety and like had a say in the actual editing of the film, I think you're fucking baked. Because if you think that fucking Robert Kraft is in the fucking cutting room deciding which goes in where and what goes in where, I'm not done. But there are all those people in the room work for Robert Kraft, and they know exactly how he feels and exactly how he wants to be portrayed. So saying Kraft had a direct hand in the editing and how he's portrayed, kind of crazy. But pointing out the connection between Kraft's video services and the documentary, obviously that where the money and where all the information comes from is going to influence what's going to be in the documentary, no matter if Robert Kraft is in the cutting room or not. So I think him playing dumb on that is not that crazy. I think there's a reason they didn't show all the former players the full cut before it went out, because I think you would have had a lot of this discourse before it went out. I think a lot of these players would have been like, yeah, I don't think this is exactly what like Patriots Nation is looking for, blah blah blah. And then now it's like you got guys like McCourty almost like walking back what they said after they knew how it was cut and how it was used.
You got Roddy Harrison saying he sat there for 5 or 6 hours and they used what? 5 minutes of his footage. Like,
yeah.
If you listen to what they had to say after that thing was done, it was kind of eye opening.
Yeah. And I think the thing is like, I don't know. You said you want to have sex with Jonathan Kraft Hogan. Like, I get that, but like, no, just fine. Fine. We're very open-minded podcast, dude. We love you, bro. But it's almost time for us to say, just fucking go down to fucking Mar-a-Lago, fucking go down to Florida, take your golf cart full of hookers with you, and then leave it to Jonathan. Because right now, Kraft and the Revolution are Jonathan's thing, and the Patriots is Bob's thing. And it's totally ass backwards, dude. You have the senile old man. Dude, love you, Bob Kraft. Mean it. But you're lost your fastball is fucking being nice as fuck. But you've lost your fastball, and it's time to turn it over. And I think that he has too much pride to do that right now because he's still competing with the Jerry Joneses and shit of the world. He wants to be the marquee franchise and shit like that. But I think it's time. Dude, Jerry's kid does so much of the football operation, dude. He's part of the GM team. He's part of the fucking media team. He's part of fucking every level of that organization. I think it's time for Jonathan to take a bigger role. I don't know what you guys have to think about that, but
the problem with that though is that Kraft's never going to give that up until he croaks, which is abundantly obvious at this point. But the thing is, you touch on a good point with Jerry Jones. He's becoming a poor version of Jerry Jones, because at least Jerry Jones, as inept as the Cowboys are at the end of the year in the playoffs and whatnot, Jones goes out of his way to try and make that team as good as possible, regardless of what the backlash is on. I mean, the dude signed Greg Hardy after he beat the shit out of his girlfriend or wife or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Everybody
on the planet knew that was a terrible choice to make. But guess what? Greg Hardy was still one of the best defensive players in the league when he did that. So, but the problem with Kraft is, like you touched on the pride thing. Yeah, exactly. But the problem with Kraft is he's too prideful, like you said, where he's not willing to let the leash get, you know, any looser at this point, because he just thinks that it's his team. He's got to do what he's got to do. But it's like, dude, you're only making it worse going forward. The future is not looking brighter at this point. It's looking worse and worse with him. And to quote, you know, the Batman movies that we all know and love, it's like, live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And that is what Kraft is slowly becoming at this point, because he is just making these stupid, stupid decisions. And again, I'm all in on the hope train for Jerod Mayo. We don't know if this is going to work. I mean, I'm already sweating bullets thinking about the draft next month. And it's like, if they don't nail this and start turning this ship around, it's only going to be getting worse and worse. And you're going to see the Patriots return to a poverty franchise before the dynasty era.
They already are well on their way to it at this point. If Jerod Mayo doesn't work out and whoever they draft at three, like if say it's a quarterback doesn't work out, they're there. They're already there as far as I'm concerned. The over under for them to win next year is 3.5.
Four and a half.
And like,
I'll take the over. I'll take the over on that.
I would take the over right now on that. Yeah. Right now. Let's see what they do in the draft. But like, I don't know. Hogan, that quote from the Batman movies is perfect. And I think he's already well on his way to being the villain. And this Dynasty documentary really helped jumpstart that whole narrative.
Well, you know what I think? If we assigned a position to every member of the Batman team, you know what? I think I would make the Joker a cornerback. Burge. Burge, take it away, my friend.
That segue game is on point tonight, Joe.
I know. I had a shitload of Wheaties this morning.
Well, we're back again. Last week, we did our top five wide receivers. The all BTP team is back again. We're breaking down the positions for our greatest of all time. This week, as Joe so elegantly put it, we're going to cornerbacks. We want to switch it up and go defense. And I think quarterbacks is a good place to start. A lot of talent has come through. A lot of great Hall of Fame type players have come through the league at the cornerback position. Let's get into it.
Love it.
Excellent. Honorable mention first. I want to get a couple of honorable mentions first. Can we do that first? Are you guys able to do that?
I'm scared about honorable mentions is I have two of them, and I think that there is a possibility they might be on both of your lists.
That's fine. That's okay. Fine. We'll make our cases. So without further ado, I'm gonna go to Joe first. Give me some of your honorable mentions.
So I have two honorable mentions. I'll start with the recent one, Jalen Ramsey. The dude's fucking nasty, bro. He's been on three teams, which is kind of a thread when you read through, especially my quarterback list. It's a little bit of a thread. It might be not a thread, but I forget what it's called. Yeah, I'm just not the smartest guy. But so I have Jalen Ramsey. Dude's been at the top of his career he's been one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback in the game for the last 5, 6, 7 years. He started as a kind of high risk, high reward player. A lot of gambling, a lot of pick sixes, and now he's turned into like the classic long, tall, shutdown corner. He might not have the flashy plays like he used to, but he's turning into he's aging as his career. And then my other one I want to shout out there. He almost made the fifth spot on mine. But he was the classic. His peak was a little bit too short. His peak was as high as all the highs get, but it was a little bit too short for me. And that's our boy Ty Law. Ty Law was unfucking believable to watch. And for about three and a half seasons, I'll give you four, was the best cornerback in the game. Maybe 2-1-1A was it Woodson at the time? I don't want to foreshadow here, but he was 1-1A for 4 or 5 years there in the late 90s, early 2000s when the Patriots went on their runs. So, those are my two honorable mentions. Those are the two guys that I left off my top five.
I like it. I too also had Ty Law as an honorable mention. Same kind of justification. His peak was a little too late, and he was a critical piece to the early Patriots dynasty. Obviously, we all remember his interception of Kurt Warner in the Super Bowl 36, the first Super Bowl, of him going down the field with his arm in the air, celebrating the touchdown there. And then probably my favorite memory of Ty Law was in the AFC Championship or divisional round of 2003 when they played the Colts. And Peyton Manning completed more passes to Ty Law than to Marvin Harrison in that game.
Yeah, that was
unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, yeah, absolutely have Ty Law there. My second, I'm going to give you two here. Daryl Green. Daryl Green. Oh,
yeah. Redskins,
with
right?
With the Redskins.
Back. Fast as hell.
What's that?
Fast as hell, dude.
Yeah, fast as hell. He played 19 seasons in the league with Washington. Was an all-pro, was a first-team all-pro once, was a second-team all-pro for 2 years. And as I said last week when we were talking about the receivers, like, I value longevity when I think about these things if the player is good enough. And the fact that he was able to sustain that for that period of time was unbelievable. So Daryl Green and Ty Law are my two honorable mentions to my list. Hogan, what do you got?
Okay, I got a little bit of a laundry list here for my honorable mentions, but I'm going to keep it short and sweet. I'm going to read them off, and then if you guys are cool with it, I'm going to go right in number five to get this segment rocking and rolling. So on top of my honorable mentions list with you guys as well, I have Ty Law on there, and then not to, you know, scare you guys with the rest of my list, but I got some notable names on here. So the other ones are a little bit of a history buff and me talking about Dick LeBeau. You guys might know him as the Pittsburgh defensive coordinator forever, but he actually played forever with Detroit, and he was phenomenal for a long time. Piggybacking off of him, we got Mel Blount, who was an absolute terror for the Steelers for a while there. And then this one, you guys might not like it, but I got Rondé Barber as an honorable mention in there.
I like emphasis on longevity.
Longevity for sure. An all-time great, but he doesn't crack my top five. Now, this is where it gets interesting, because this fifth guy on my honorable mentions list, I had him at number five until I started doing a little bit of my research here, but I had to put him on honorable mentions instead of my number five. I'm going with Champ Bailey on my honorable mentions list. So the champ, I mean, he was phenomenal for so long, and I actually had to look it up. I didn't realize he made the Super Bowl for the Broncos when they got absolutely smoked by Seattle in 2014. But yeah, he was, for a while, he was an absolute terror. But number five on my all-time corners list, I'm giving that honor to Charles Woodson. He is number five. He just beat out Champ Bailey. And when we talk about Charles Woodson, what he brought to the table, this guy was absolutely unbelievable. Just looking at his real quick, we'll look at his career highlights and awards. He was a Super Bowl champ with the Green Bay Packers. He was Defensive Player of the Year 2009, Defensive Rookie of the Year in 98, four-team first-team All-Pro, four-time second-team All-Pro, nine-time Pro Bowler, two-time NFL interceptions leader. The dude was phenomenal forever. I mean, till the day he hung up his cleats, the guy was phenomenal. You go to his Wikipedia page, I could sit here for, you know, 10 hours reading every accomplishment he made, but for the longest time, Charles Woodson was that guy. And let's not forget that he was also a Heisman Trophy winner.
I was like, wasn't he the last defensive player to win a Heisman?
And he beat out Peyton Manning.
Good.
And Randy Moss.
That's some good company right there.
So let's kick it over to Joe, because I think I have an inkling that you might have a familiar name at number five with your list.
Yeah, dude, I got Charles Woodson too, dude. I remember, dude, Charles Woodson was so fucking fun to watch, dude. And I remember that, like, the Defensive Player of the Year season. I think he was with last year with Green Bay. I always get confused if he went to, because Rod Woodson and Charles Woodson both played for the Raiders, but one was in the middle of his career and one was at the end. And I think Charles Woodson played for the, I can't fucking remember, but dude, he was so fucking fun to watch. He was a shutdown corner, but also a ball hawk at the same time. And then the only other thing I'll add here, dude, 65 career interceptions, dude. That's a lot, dude. That's a whole lot of fucking interceptions, dude. So, yeah, I fuck with Charles Woodson. Really fun to watch. He was a classic, wicked, awesome, like, great Madden player. Wicked fun to play with on Madden. So, yeah, I got Charles Woodson in my five spot as well.
My five spot, I have a guy that Hogan mentioned in his honorable mention, was Champ Bailey. Champ Bailey, absolute beast for a long period of time during his career there with Washington and then Denver. He was an all-pro, first and second team, quite a bit throughout his entire career. Received votes, was a second place defensive player of the year back in 2006, which was, you know, kind of in the prime of his career. He was an absolute pleasure to watch. Like, it just seemed like every time he was out there, he was hawking the ball. And, you know, I'll never forget the touchdown that he had in the playoffs against the Patriots with Denver. The interception, it was like a 99 or 100 yard touchdown return where Ben Watson ran him down at the end, but it ended up being a touchdown, and that's up for debate. But dude took it to the house, and I that's one of the early memories for me watching football back in the early 2000s.
That was hold on a second. That was a fucking touchback, right?
Yes. At the end of the day, yes, it was, because he got fucking – Ben Watson was an absolute animal on that play. But it was ruled a touchdown. It was ruled a touchdown.
Why don't we just bring logic and geometry into – and, like, the laws of physics into, like, this shit sometimes. He hits him from behind, and the ball goes backwards? Anyway, sorry. Spilled milk. I'm still crying.
Yes. So, anyways, back on track. I have Champ Bailey at number – five. My number four, let's move on to number four. I have Darrell Revis. Darrell Revis was the best cornerback in the league during his time. He was played for the Jets, that was probably their highlight recently. Like, they went to two straight AFC title games during his career there, and was a three-time All-Pro. And you know, Revis Island was coined for a reason. Couldn't throw at him. So give me Darrell Revis at number four. Hogan.
Damn, it's like an echo chamber in here. I'm right there with you, Burge. I got Revis at number four as well. Revis was absolutely incredible to watch. Again, we're not going to beat a dead horse here where you talked about some of his accomplishments, but I'll just, as much as I hated him with the Jets, I do absolutely love him for that 2014 season that he came with us and just lit it up in the regular season. He kind of disappeared in the playoffs, I feel like. I mean, granted, we still did what we had to do to win. Mm-hmm. I mean, but that's postseason will forever be the Malcolm Butler postseason. Have fun in jail, by the way, Malcolm. Sorry about that. Come on. You're free.
Just take me to jail.
But again, Revis at number four, he was absolutely a nightmare at corner. And I remember I clenched every time Brady threw the ball in his direction, other than the one time Randy housed it over him in that 2007 season.
I'm sure your that was just still.
Oh, that was phenomenal. But yeah, again, Revis, number four. Let's kick it over to Joe. Who you got at number four, buddy?
So I once again have a repeat at number four. I got Champ Bailey at number four. Another two things I'll add in. He's part of the All 2000s team. Played some wide receiver. Cool. And wasn't he traded for Clinton Portis in like one of the most like actual football trades of all time? Mm-hmm. So it was like Champ Bailey for Clinton Portis, like straight up. So, and then the other thing is 52 career interceptions, 10 in 2006. Kind of cool. So I always thought of Champ Bailey as a, how do I say this? Maybe his aura is a little bit more than like the sum of his actual skill. You know what I mean? But I think his longevity and his, dude, he was still a viable player like very, very late into his career. So I definitely give him props for that. So I got him at four for longevity, likability, all that stuff thrown in, but also obviously a 12-time Pro Bowler, so you can't really shake a stick at that. So I'll slide into the third spot here. I'll take my first pick of the third round here. We've already picked his last name, but we haven't picked his first. I'm going to go with Rod Woodson. So I'm not young, but as a younger person on this podcast, a younger person in the NFL, the grand scheme of the NFL, is I didn't really watch a lot of Rod Woodson. But I'll watch a lot of his highlights, and that's a bad dude. That's a real fucking bad dude. So I got a couple of stats here. So he's he has a defensive player of the year, eleven Pro Bowl selections, six All Pro selections. He had an All Pro selection in three different decades. He's a Hall of Famer. He's part of the All 90s team. And listen to this shit, dude. And this is in 2000. This is in 2020 or 2024, where you got all this fucking regenerative medicine, fucking dealer antler display. Shout out Ray Lewis. Come on the pod. But, bro, this dude in 2000, when he played, so he was part of the Ravens. Was it Super Bowl? No, this was Super Bowl 30. So this was 35.
34.
No, it wasn't Super Bowl 35. It was Super Bowl 30. I wrote the Super Bowl down. So regardless, I think they lost this game. But he played in Super Bowl 30. He tore his ACL in week one of the season and then played in the fucking Super Bowl 18 weeks later. Are you motherfucking kidding me, dude? That's less than 5 months recovery time, and you played in an NFL game. That's so impressive. I got Rod Woodson as my number three all-time quarterback.
I'll go next. My number three, I'm not going to have to say much on it because you guys have already said a lot on him, Charles Woodson. The longevity, the fact that at the end of his career, the last year of his career in 2015, at the age of 39, he was a second-team All-Pro for Oakland at the time. Just, he was an amazing player to watch. Shut down corner, like you guys said. So Charles Woodson's my number three. Hogan?
All right, I am going into the history book, boys, and I've known this name for a while. I've heard the horror stories about him. I can only imagine being able to watch this guy play. Dick Night Train Lane is number three for me. And when you want to talk about accomplishments at a time when the forward pass was not as prevalent as it was today, holy shit. This guy was the real deal. First off,
this guy was really good at playing corner when they didn't throw the ball a lot.
I mean, he started playing in 1952. And he played for the LA Rams. He last played in 1965. As a rookie in 1952, he had 14 interceptions. a mark that remains an NFL record over 70 years later.
That's
insane. That's insane. That is a rookie. As a fucking rookie, he did that. And then he only got better as time went on. That's the incredible part. Seven Pro Bowls. I'm looking at his stats right now. He had 68 interceptions over a 13-year career.
Holy
fuck. In the 1950s and 60s. Okay.
Quarterbacks aware he was playing for the other team.
And you know what the most incredible part is? He's actually known for two things. He was known for clothes that there's like an infamous picture of him clotheslining a guy and standing over him in that black and white photo where he absolutely destroyed. I forget who it was. I want to say it was, I'm looking it up real quick if I can remember. John Arnett by the face mask. That was actually it, where he grabbed him by the face mask and just threw him down. It was absolutely insane. But on top of that too, a fun fact about him, the reason why he's nicknamed Night Train, dude was afraid to fly. So he had to take trains to all the games.
John Madden.
That was the whole thing. Yeah, that you might know about him from John Madden. But number three, Dick Night Train Lane, freaking beast. Love it.
I love the history. I love the history and diving deep into the early stages of the league. Hogan, I want to get your number. I want to go right to you for number two.
Let's do it. Again, a name that's already popped up on here before, but I'm going to go with him again, is Rod Woodson. I originally looked at him as possibly being my number one guy just because he was phenomenal for so long, but I'm going to knock him down a peg just because he had to switch to safety towards the end of his career, which, you know, no disrespect, but if we're looking at true corners for the long time, I want a true corner to be my number one. And Rod Woodson is just the pinnacle of longevity, playmaking. Joe, you touched on the story that I wanted to talk about with him tearing his ACL and then making it back for the Super Bowl. I mean, that's just absolutely crazy town, banana pants to me. But he was so good for so long. And Rod Woodson, number two for me.
Joe, who you got number two?
I have somebody we've already talked about before, Darrell Revis. Dude, he was just – he's the classic good quarterback, does not come up. He never came up. Nobody ever threw at him. Nobody was ever open on his side of the field. He always made the play. He had like – he was one season he had like 35 pass defend, like passes defended, and it's like 90% of them were in the first 10 games, and it's just like they just stopped throwing at him. And then the other stat I want to bring up, dude, in his career, his passer rating against – was 29.1. That is fucking ridiculous. You know, if you throw the ball into the ground every single time, you have a 50. It's like 49-50, like quarterback rating. So he had a bet. He. It was worse. Instead of throwing it into the ground, throwing it at Darrell Revis was actually worse for your team. So yeah, I got him as number two. He was in my lifetime the best corner I ever saw play.
Love it. My number two might be a little controversial with you guys, but I have primetime Deion Sanders at number two. I had a hard time debating him with my number one, but the fact that he took 3 years off in the middle of towards the end of his career where he retired and then came back, longevity is a big thing for me, and he sat out 3 years at the end of his career. He was an unbelievable player and an unbelievable athlete. Great kick returner. Great. He even played wide receiver a little bit for Dallas during his time there. I don't think there's been a real personality like him in the league since he was in the league. So, like, that whole aura, we talked about aura going around him. It was there, and he was him during his time. But he doesn't take the cake away from who I think is number one. I'm going to move right to it. And my number one cornerback is Rod Woodson. We've talked about him here. Joe, the stat you brought up about him coming back and playing on that torn ACL in the Super Bowl, unbelievable. This guy played 17 years in the league. Like, I think you might have already touched on it, but he did win an All-Pro in three different decades, which was unbelievable. And at age 37 with Oakland, he was a first-team All-Pro. And again, tying into the whole longevity thing and being at the top of your game for that long of a period of time, really resonates with me. So give me Rod Woodson. He also was a part of that, one of the best defenses of all time with that Baltimore Ravens defense of the 2000, one of the best defenses ever with Ray Lewis, and you could name every Hall of Famers off that defense everywhere that won the Super Bowl. So yeah, give me Rod Woodson number one. I know that might be a little controversial considering where you guys had him, but I think I know where you guys are going with your number one. So we'll go to Joe first.
Dude, not only is Deion Sanders the best cornerback in NFL history, he very well might be the best athlete in the history of planet Earth. You're talking about a above average MLB player and a top two. You can't argue he's not top two at his position in football. The dude had 19 return touchdowns in his career. That was 11 years long. 11, bro. Dude, let me bring up this fucking stat, dude. I was drooling over his fucking stat pages, bro. In 1994, the year I was born, you could argue top 5 year in the history of Earth. He had 6 interceptions. He had 300 interception return yards off 6. So think about it. He had 300 return yards. 300 return yards as a defensive back. That includes, punt returns and kickoff returns and interception returns. He had 3 pick sixes. So out of your best year in your career, you have 6 interceptions. You return 3 for a touchdown. You have 300 yards for your team outside of playing defense and taking the ball away. That is unfucking believable. Not to mention, he won a Super Bowl with 2 separate teams, meaning that his contribution to the team always meant something. It meant something to those 49ers teams, and it meant something to those Cowboys teams. I'm getting fired up. I fucking love me some Deion. But so he had 53 career interceptions, 9 career pick sixes, 19 total return touchdowns. He's a Hall of Famer. He's part of the All 90s team. 8 Pro Bowlers. 11 years in the league, 8 Pro Bowls, 6 All Pros, and 2 fucking Super Bowl championships with a Defensive Player of the Year in 11 fucking years. Yeah, I know he took his 3 years off. You know what he did in those 3 years? He went and won a fucking World Series with the Braves. All right?
I don't care about baseball. I don't care about baseball on this podcast.
That was a lie to make my point stronger. That was a complete lie. But I got Deion Sanders as my number one quarterback, and I got him as my number one athlete of all time.
Hogan.
I'm right there with you, Joe. Deion Sanders, prime time. There's nobody better. There's absolutely nobody better. I mean, just he might not have the same stats as everybody else. He might not have the longevity. He might not have whatever the all-encompassing stuff that you need. But when you put together the entire resume of what he did at corner was absolutely insane. There was no one else like him from the minute he came into the league. From what he did with Atlanta, I mean, they were a poverty franchise at the time, and he was still electrifying every time he took the field in Atlanta. And then it just, that persona blew up the minute he went to San Francisco. They immediately won the Super Bowl. I mean, and then the next year goes to Dallas, immediately wins the Super Bowl. The guy was a contender the minute he went to a new team. It was absolutely incredible to watch him. And if you look at who he matched up against in the games that he played in, he shut down Jerry Rice. Name another cornerback that can shut down Jerry Rice. I mean, granted, it was a back and forth battle, but like, the dude was the dude. There was no one else like him. There will never be anybody else like him. And Joe, like you talked about the fact that he did all of this and played Major League Baseball. The dude won a Super Bowl and won a World Series. Like,
hold on, sorry. He did not win a World Series. He played in a World Series.
Oh, played in a World Series of the Braves.
Oh, he played in a World Series game and in an NFL game in the same fucking day.
He did do that. Yeah. I remember hearing about that.
How many times did fucking Rod Woodson do that shit, Burge, huh?
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, no, give me prime time at number one. There will never be another prime time. Never.
Also fuck with prime time just in general, dude. Like, dude, so like he's obviously
Primetime Production shout out.
Yeah, dude, Primetime, come on the pod. Come on one of the pods. We got to get you on here, brother. But dude, he had, you know that girl Brittany Renner, who her whole like scheme in life and her whole thing is like getting athletes pregnant. Like she got pregnant by PJ Washington. She's had relations with a bunch of like NBA players. So she's basically like, this is how you get a bag, by being a hoe. Brings Brittany Renner into Colorado and tells, like, shows the players, like, this is what happens when you fuck around. You know what I mean? Like, he has, like, his perception of, like, how to mold young men, dude. He's, like, he's super stern. He runs a tight ship, but he's also very aware of, like, the day and age that, like, his players playing. So, like, we talk about longevity and shit like that. Yeah, I totally get that. Deion only played, I think he played 12 full seasons. But, bro, longevity sometimes means outside of the, like, of his playing of the game. You know what I mean? And the legacy that he's leaving in the college ranks at Jackson and now at Colorado, I just think is so, like, it should never be looked on as a negative as Deion. Deion is he is actively giving back to the game he loves, and I think it's so fucking cool that he gets to do it with his son. Second of all, if the Patriots don't pick a quarterback at number three, I hope we go fucking 4-13 again and get a shot at Shedeur Sanders, because yo boy, I will have a custom Shedeur Sanders jersey of the Patriots before we even draft him, and I will make you guys' life a living hell, a living hell.
I suppose we have to start ranking our players based on what they do outside of the game now. So apparently that's Joe's argument here.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Yeah. Anyways. I don't know. Just is the Colorado football team a football team? So that's still inside the sport. I don't know. I just don't know. I don't get your.
We're talking about the play on the field, Joe.
Okay. Now I get it. I'm moving the goalposts here. I'm trying to be right. Fucking leave me alone, dude.
Hey, you got to do, right?
Give me the keys to the car. Expect me to drive it, bro.
So there you have it, another edition of the All BTP team. One name that I'm surprised none of us even mentioned in our honorable mention, that kind of surprised me a little bit, and I'm kind of regretting not saying his name, is Richard Sherman. I think that he absolutely should be at least in the honorable mention. I'm not saying he should be ranked in the top three of this list, but he was atop his position with Darrelle Revis at the time. He was like at the top tier of his position during the time that he played. I'm very surprised that he was not mentioned.
So the knock against him is he never went off the left side.
That's fair. That's a fair knock.
You had to do to get. No, I agree, because he would be in the same as like the Jalen Ramsey and Ty Law category.
Exactly.
Right. Might not have been the number one for an extended period of time, but definitely top three for an extended period of time. But like, I mean, the whole Crabtree shit was awesome. Grabbing his chain, you got your chain snatched. You're a B word, bro. You're a B word, bro. But the thing about him only playing the left side, and his best years were with like two other. Like very good, like Chancellor and like Browner, and then
Thomas,
and Chancellor Browner and Earl Thomas, dude. So it's like he was definitely the cog that made that go. Like you didn't really have to worry about the left side of the field when he was on the field at corner. But I definitely think he gets knocked because of that stuff. Hogan, what do you think?
I was gonna say being a part of the Legion of Boom was kind of his downfall for me, because it's like he was the persona of the Legion of Boom, but like. I still take like Earl Thomas and Chancellor over him as secondary players, because those guys, like Sherman, would pick off shit and match up against your best guys. But like you were afraid of Chancellor, you were afraid of Earl Thomas. Over
Brandon
the top
Browner,
there. Like,
dude, that dude's Brandon. Crazy.
Yeah.
Bro.
Well, that's another one. Yeah, well, he's in jail for the next like 20 years with whatever the hell he's doing. But you know what? Actually, Browner.
It always
attempted murder. Attempted murder.
It always stops you in your tracks. You're like, yeah, this guy's in jail.
Yeah.
No, he's not in prison. A good dude. He's not in jail. That dude's in prison.
Prison. But no, actually, one guy that I contemplated putting on my honorable mentions list that might raise a few eyebrows, but I would take him over Sherman any day, is Aqib Talib.
Really?
Because
Aqib Talib, I'm taking one game because I don't know.
He snatched a couple chains in his day too.
Well, that's the thing, is like he was legit. Like you think about when he came from Tampa to the Patriots, he immediately turned us into like a legit contender just by showing up in the secondary that year, because he was a force. I mean, he single-handedly shut down Jimmy Graham when Jimmy Graham was the dude that year. Like Jimmy Graham had like 15 touchdowns that year. He had zero catches against the Patriots that year. Like he was legit. And then went to Denver and he was even better with Denver. That's the crazy part.
Was it 2015 when the Patriots lost in Denver? But before that, like when they played in Denver, like originally that year, that fucking Wes Welker fucking took out his hip and shit like that.
Yep.
So like, that's another player that, dude, what could have been, dude? He was so fucking dude, and I just love the like. There's something about like a confident like. I'm not a huge Richard Sherman guy, but I was a big Aqib Talib guy, and I was a big Deion guy. There's something about like Sherman's a little bit of a like crybaby bitch, and like Aqib Talib and like Deion. There was some like they had like cachet, dude. They had like I don't want to call
swag.
It swag.
They had the swagger.
Yeah,
they
dude.
Had the
I don't
want to
call it swagger because we overuse the word so much now. But they had swagger, dude. Mm-hmm. And I remember Deion. Had this like it was like they were talking to him about the first time he played Jerry Rice, and he stuck out his hand to shake Jerry Rice's hand, and Jerry Rice didn't even look up, didn't even go to shake his hand, and Deion was like, from that point I knew it was fucking on. And like I just like there's the mentality, dude. If I stuck my hand out and Jerry Rice didn't shake my hand, I'd be like, dude, I'll buy Copperfit, dude. Please like me. I'll buy Copperfit. I'll let you roast me in fucking flag football, dude. I promise, dude. Just fucking like me. And Deion was like, nah, I'm shutting the second best receiver of all time down. You know what I mean? That's just like I fuck heavily with like that kind of mindset. There's a fine line you toe, and I think there's a couple players that go overboard with it. But I like the confidence that you have to be like a number one shutdown wide receiver is bar none.
Yeah, I do have one more snub, and it might be because he played in Arizona for a majority of his career. But Aeneas Williams was one.
Okay,
8-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All Pro. Played 14 years in the league. He's a Hall of Famer. And I left him off my honorable mention list. I probably shouldn't have. I kind of shortened mine up a little bit, but he would have been there had I gone on a diatribe about my honorable mention list. But he was among the best in the league for at least for a majority of his career, we'll say the 90s. And I was surprised that none of us, especially you, Hogan, I was surprised you didn't pick up on him.
I looked at him, but anytime I think of Arizona cornerbacks, I think of Patrick Peterson. But it's also
Arizona.
But Patrick Peterson
beyond the fucking honorable mention list.
I think of Peterson more as a return man than I do of like a shutdown corner. You know what I mean? Like he was electric in his rookie year where he returned a few punts and kickoffs that were awesome, but it's like putting Devin Hester on your all time wide receiver list because he returned a ridiculous amount of kickoffs. You know what I mean? That's kind of how I look at Peterson. Isn't it crazy
the person who beat Dion's fucking record was a specialist? Like, Dion was the best corner in the game and also the best returner in the game at the same fucking time, and Burge had him at number fucking two. What an asshole, dude. Fucking dickhead. All right, so this is something we started up last podcast. We wanted to make a return on this podcast to let you guys know it's for real. It's the all BTP team. We're taking requests for position groups we want to do. We don't want to rip through everything quickly here, but we also don't want to start ranking fucking guards off the bat. So if you guys have rankings you want from us or maybe a position group that we should kind of move to the top here, top of the stack, we would love to know about it. This was kind of a fan request today to go with cornerback. So what's your buddy's name, Hogan, that was helping us out?
We got a special shout out for Rick Griffith, my buddy at work. I know you wanted running backs, buddy. We'll talk about Walter Payton soon enough. I promise you.
He'll be on my honorable mention.
Oh,
fighting words.
Rick's not going to like you. It's okay, Rick. I'll talk to you when we get to it. Don't worry about it.
I'm not here to be liked. I'm here to be right.
Appreciate you, Rick. Appreciate you.
You're the man, Rick. We appreciate your input and all your ideas. So just like Rick, dude. Fucking DM the count, DM one of us. All of our DMs are open. My DMs are open to pictures too. So get fucking weird in there if you want. I'll send you the Crisco code if you need it. No pause. All tail. Anyway, I'm just kidding. That's pretty good. I just made that up right now. At least I'm not blowing my wad like fucking Aries James a couple episodes ago. Just blowing my wad all over the fucking episode.
Spread that seed.
Anyway, that sounds like a good place to plug this bad bitch up. Again, this is the BTP podcast brought to you by Primetime Productions. You can find them on Twitter at Primetime Prods. You can find them online at primetimeproductions.net. I'm your host, Joe Scher, alongside my co-host, Burge, our third chair, Hogan, our master on the ones and twos, Kojak. Hope you guys have a great rest of your week.
Peace.
Later.